Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Echoes from a Vanished World is a fascinating new book about Spain. The late 19th and early 20th centuries, all the way through to the death of Franco in 75, 50 years ago, of course, this year. It is a rather brilliant book by Maggie Burnett, and I'm delighted to say that she joins me live on the line now. Maggie, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning.
Good to have you with us. What I like about this book, Maggie, is the fact that it's not, this, as you say yourself, it's not the Spain of cheery villagers slapping each other on the back. It's not the sort of driving over lemons experience. Neither is it, if you like, the heavy-hitting book of politics. But it's a personal journey, but it takes in a broad sweep of Spain and the perception of what it is to be Spanish. Explain to me a little bit about your background and your first impressions of when you came to Spain.
Yeah, fine. Well, I'm English, and I didn't come from England. I came from Germany, which in the 1980s, and well, actually the end of the 1970s, Germany then was highly organized. So I arrived in Spain, and it wasn't exactly highly organized. And at first, it was a shock.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people come to have fun, and this is their idea. But for me, it wasn't like that because I'd already met my future husband. So I knew right from the beginning that I had to fit into society. So that for me was very difficult because it was so different. And this is one reason I wanted to write the book, because I feel that the rural environment is very, very important. It had a great influence in Spain. So often, Spanish history, it's the Civil War. Mm. And that seems to be the main thing. But for me, it's not the main thing. There are many other factors in Spanish history that are really important.
So when did you arrive in Spain? And where did you arrive in Spain?
In Madrid in 1979.
Right. An interesting period, because as the saying was, that's right on the cusp of La Movida, you know, because they always say that Spain had its 60s in the 80s. How did you find sort of Madrid as a young foreigner? I mean, because obviously this is Spain is very much getting to grips as a young democracy, and there are still echoes of the Civil War. There are old men sitting on park benches. There were women who must have been around during, obviously, that period, you know, 36, etc. What are your first impressions as if you're like a European coming to a Spain which was, if you like, sort of really sort of trapped in its past and shaking off its past?
Yeah, I think obviously that's the title of the book, Echoes of a Vanished World, because although the rural world in theory had gone, I was in Madrid. But in attitudes to a lot of things, you could still see that. For example, attitudes to the family, attitudes, social classes to a large extent were from the rural world rather than a modern city. The attitude to women, it was two extremes, because on one hand, women, older women, had been brought up in Franco's era, had been brought up in the country, in villages. But on the other hand, young women were really looking at this opportunity to move forward. So it's a very divided world. And also, as I said before, I came really to get married. So I was straight into the family. So I missed all that that a lot of people have of going out, the nightlife. It was immediately trying to buy a flat, not much money. So I saw it a very different way. And also as I was staying, I realized I had to understand the country. I couldn't just be here, you know, superficial idea, and then disappear after a couple of years. I had to stay much longer. So it was, I think, a dual.
I was going to say, that must have been a tremendous culture shock then if you go straight in and you know, family in Spain. I mean, when I moved here permanently in 85, I mean, I was just amazed at how strong the family was coming from Northern Europe. And you know, nights out as a 17-year-old, and I was forever meeting somebody's cousins or somebody's whatever, because the family unit was still very much intact in a way that another year, you know, whole families, whole uncles and aunts were in the same town, the same pueblo, whereas, you know, in Northern Europe, we've sort of scattered because of various economic and social reasons.
Yeah, well, I did find that difficult because, as I said in the book, there are two sides to the family. There's the fantastic side, which is the support, but also it is necessary to say that the support had to be there because there was no social security system. They weren't going to receive any help from the state. So any help that they got had to be from the family. So, yeah, the family was very important, and I found it good to a certain extent, but also I found it quite difficult because there were a lot of expectations that every Sunday you would go to the family. A lot of women didn't work, a majority probably didn't work or just starting to work. So they could quite easily go off and spend Sunday with the family. But right from the beginning, I was working and I couldn't. So that, it was good and bad. And I think the family in the villages is quite claustrophobic.
Yeah, because
I think families don't always get on quite as well as you get the impression. I think there's this idea that they're always, you know, big, happy families. They're not.
I mean, you've got that whole situation, haven't you? You say, you know, Sunday with the family. I mean, Sunday was, and also Sunday is, you know, the role of the church in the late 70s. I mean, it doesn't really start to wane, you could argue, until late 80s, early 90s, when, you know, there's a sort of second generation comes through, because there is that a very strong structure, church and state. You do not, you know, because Spain has lived under dictatorship, so therefore everything else is either state owned or it's run by the church, it seems. And that's a really difficult concept for us, Mackie, for Northern Europeans, to get on board with.
Yeah, and I definitely. And there were things that, well, I met a lot of people from the extreme Catholic groups, and you know, I had to be careful what I said. You know, you can't stick your foot in it, we're still now. I mean, obviously, it's what they believe, and I respect what they believe. There were things, like as you said, you know, if you came in the 80s, I remember on television when there was any issue, you would go over to the bishops. So we'd have all the bishops sitting there giving their point of view on divorce or all these other subjects. And obviously don't mention abortion, which was completely out. So you could see there again, for me, that was not just something from Franco, although Franco was very pushed and gave a lot of power to the Catholic Church. But it was also from the rural world. It was from the 19th century, the 20th century. This influence of the church had always been very, very important. So it took, as you said, again, probably the 90s, it took some time for this influence to weaken.
And also, you mentioned the countryside. I mean, Spain is maybe it's now, you know, Madrid, Barcelona, Valencia, Malaga, you know, they're tech savvy places. It's, you know, they're the new sort of, if you're not, almost powerhouses of at least of Spain. But there is a culture. I mean, there is, you know, agriculture is incredibly important. I mean, the whole thing about Spain is you can literally, in most places, you can get into a car and drive, and 20 minutes to half an hour later, you are in the middle of the campo. I mean, you are in the middle of a Spain that hasn't really changed for hundreds of years.
Yeah, I think it has changed in a way because of the things like internet, because we've still got a house in a village, which is very different from my parents-in-law house, which was in the mountains. And as you said, that was completely cut off. The way they lived, I actually start the book by talking a bit about the village before, the village in the 18th, early 19th century, because it was the same village. It was the same way of life. It was the same attitudes. It was the same traditions. And it was very limited. This was what my family-in-law, particularly my father-in-law, as I said in the book, was very intelligent. But in the village, there were no possibilities whatsoever. So I think this is very important also to see why there was a civil war, because there were a lot of people in the country, in villages, who were given no opportunity and life was very hard. They didn't have medical services. They didn't have any support from the state. And a lot of people from the villages wouldn't even have gone to Madrid. Mm. Madrid would be a big adventure. Then when we later, obviously, when we had children, we bought the house in the village on the plains, a completely different area. And I think that was very different because there was more contact with the outside world. But it is still very, very conservative.
When you come to write this book, are you based it around a family? Because otherwise you might get in that trap of writing, you know, the dreaded Paco and his donkey, which is whenever I read a book that's got Paco and his donkey, it goes immediately over my left or right shoulder. But also there's that whole thing of sort of romanticizing Spain, for example, the Civil War, and you get Hemingway and you get, you know, you get Capra and you get Murray Gellhorn and all that sort of thing. And villages and people didn't talk about, you know, 36 and onwards because of the deep scars emotionally through society and the reprisals and what, you know, I mean, I remember there was a guy in the village I used to live in who was called, his nickname was Matarojos, you know, which was his nickname. And you just think, yeah, there was a harsh reality, you know, to life in Spain, and there still is. The only now is being discussed, and even now, because the generations have, you know, we are losing that generation of the 30s and the 40s. So the realities of what it was like is being, if you like, in some aspects, being sort of rose tinted and saying, oh well, at least everybody had a job back in those days, or at least everybody knew where they were in those days.
Yeah, it's always like that, isn't it? Like looking back to Victorian Britain, you know, yeah. there's always a tendency to look at the past either as horrific or in a really positive light. But this was one reason I wanted to write the book, because as you said at the beginning, I wanted to give a different idea of Spain, and especially to British people, because I think British people have the idea of the Civil War. There are many, many books about the Civil War, which are excellent. So there's that's dealt with. But what do British people know about this other world, this rural world, this harsh world, that it was so important, it was so influential? And in the 19th century, there was the problem between the urban world, where things were changing, where they were beginning to liberalism, they were beginning to establish a liberal government, and the rural world, which was still left It really in the past. So I think for me, this is very important. And also at this point, I want to say, for British people, this idea of the Spanish, lazy Spanish, you know, that not doing anything, they've had things easy. And I think after the crisis in 2008, a lot was said about this, the North, the working, the industrial people in the North, and these lazy Spaniards living off the people in the North. And of course, that's not true at all. So this did influence, because I wanted to give the idea that it was hard for them. They had struggled. And if Spain is an established democracy now, it's a huge achievement rather than the opposite. Not to mention the idea of the Spanish way of life, you know, sitting around the pool with a nice cold beer.
Yeah,
which, if you say to people in Madrid.
Yeah, and there's the other thing, of course, is the culture of emigrante. I mean, when I was living up in Antequera region, which is like an hour north of Malaga, there were several. I mean, a lot of people spoke German or French because they'd become minor. They'd gone to Belgium. They'd gone to Germany. They'd gone to work because there was no work. And, it's not just a question. And this was a huge emotional thing for them because they were leaving their villages that their families hadn't left for centuries. And you look at that as well.
Yeah, this was chapter on immigration because it wasn't only with the Civil War and with Franco. As I said, it was also in the 19th century. It was something that was constant in Spain. People living from the villages, from areas that were very difficult, or for political reasons. I'm very interested in the 19th century, and it was a constant change between liberalism, conservatism. So each lot had to disappear. And this in as well influenced Spain, because then, as you said, people came back to the villages. It influenced ideas, it influenced the architecture. So it was very important, but not nowadays, as for example in Britain, there's sort of immigration. So you tend to forget that emigration could also have a very big effect on a country.
And also, the fact that, no matter how long you live in Spain, you will never sort of be Spanish, if you like. You can never, because a lot of people say, I've been living on the Costa del Sol for 20 years. I might regard myself as Spanish. And it's like, it doesn't kind of work like that. No matter how. And I absolutely resonates with me. Explain a little bit about Maggie, how you feel that, we will never be Spanish.
Definitely not. But I think now people accept that much more. So I feel completely accepted as a foreigner, But I think when I first came to Spain, people were very wary of foreigners. Again, from the rural background, constantly going back to that, because there they were very limited. They never met anybody from outside. So suddenly these foreigners come in. And a friend of mine went to a village, a small village, and they were horrified because she was an Anglican. This was like, wow, this is really bad, this Anglican arriving. So definitely when I arrived, there was this wariness. And I think the coast was different, because in the coast there were masses of foreigners, tourists, foreigners all over the place. But in inland and even in Madrid, foreigners were not that usual. And if they did live in Madrid, they tended to live in one area in the north, the more expensive people who'd come over to work in businesses. And where I lived when I first arrived in Spain, there were no foreigners whatsoever. And they would look at you a bit like, what's she going to do? What's her, how do I deal with her? So this was, and also as well as the country background, Franco was very anti-foreign, as I said in the book as well. The women were immoral. The women had come to pinch the men. And these people actually said that, that you've come to take our men.
Indeed.
Which I had, really, but never mind.
But that's just but also, I mean, you make an interesting point. You say, if we had that time machine, we could go back X amount of years to when we first arrived in Spain, and we knew what we knew then, we'd probably look at it with different eyes. That's because you do need. I mean, Spain is, remember the old saying that Spain was different. That was the advertising campaign to get people over here. But Spain is different in so many ways than perhaps other European countries are, and it takes a very long time to sort of to get an in-depth knowledge of, because there are so many levels to this country.
Yeah, and of course, for people who live in the coast, it's much more difficult. If you do come to a big city, and I said, we've got a house in a village. So I suppose from that point of view, it's easy. I do know British people, but in general, I live completely among Spanish people. And also, I think now Spain is so different from when I first arrived. Spain now is a modern democracy. So I think somebody coming would find it much easier to fit in. But fitting into Spain of the 70s, 80s, especially in the suburbs of Madrid, it was very different, very difficult. And at first, And then graduate. But I think for me also, looking back particularly, it was very interesting because it was exactly that reason that I really wanted to get to know the society more in depth.
And when it comes to sort of boiling this down into a book that isn't the size of, I don't know, like 18 volumes long, and you're doing a social political history of massive change in Spain. I mean, how do you keep a coherent narrative, and how do you deal with the subjects of immigration, of politics, of sexual liberation, of repression? I mean, how do you, you know, because it must have been a huge undertaking when you set out.
It was very difficult. It was very, very difficult. So I was writing notes for a long time. I studied history, so I read a lot of history books. So I would read a lot of background to the subject. Of course, talking to people. So when I actually came to write it, yeah, I did find it very, very difficult to organise the chapters because I wanted it to be easy to read. I wanted it to be a book that people could pick up and, as you said, see this change that happened in Spanish society. That's why I had a chapter on emigration that also I looked backwards, and the village, the house in the village that we bought in the beginning of the 1990s, I also looked back on the history of that village. So that kept it going forward.
What are you hoping that people... Sorry, Maggie, go on.
Yeah, and also I wanted to bring in things like ETA, the terrorism, because I think that was very important in Spain. And also I think that British people I knew had even a very romanticised idea about ETA, that this terrorist group was fighting for freedom and it was a democracy. So there was still this idea that Spain wasn't really a democracy.
Mm. But you see, I mean, you see, I've got British friends, English friends as well, who still understand the complexities of what it is and the various regions that make up Spain and are saying things like, oh, yeah, but the Catalans are fighting for their freedom underneath because Madrid has still got the echoes of Franco and Madrid is still basically fascist because people support Real Madrid. I mean, that is the broadest of broad brushstrokes.
Yeah, it is. And that's why this chapter, I started off by explaining a bit about the political situation. In the whole book, I didn't really want to go into details of the political situation. When I was writing it, I tried to imagine that I was reading a history of Hungary, or where I didn't know anybody in, I didn't know any names and I didn't know any dates. So what would I want to read? And this was the idea behind my book. But in the chapter on it, I felt I did have to give a bit of background on the politics and the rights that they did have. And I think that gives a better picture.
What are you hoping that people will take from your book, Echoes from a Vanished World?
What will people take from it?
What do you hope that the people will, when they put the book down, what do you hope that they feel? What do you hope that they've learned from it?
Right. I want people to have a more positive view of modern Spain. I want them to have a deeper view of Spain, not simply Spain as the coast or Spain as Franco, as Spain as the Civil War. So as I said, I think I said in the introduction or near the beginning, there are two views of Spain. There's Spain of Philip II. We live in San Lorenzo, so it's fantastic. I'm very interested in Philip II and that part. Then there's nothing till the Civil War. Mm. But I want them to take away that there's so much more to Spain, so much more to Spanish history, so many more influences in Spain.
The book is called Echoes from a Vanished World. It is by Maggie Bennett, who we're speaking to today. If people want to find you online and say nice things to you and congratulate you, do you do social media? Is there a website? Where can people find you?
No, I don't, actually.
Probably a wise move. Well, listeners, you will be able to...
I have enough writing.
Yeah, you haven't got time to get involved with social media. Well, but listeners, you can order the book via our own virtual bookstore. If you go onto the virtual bookstore, you will see a picture of Echoes of the Vanished World. Click on that, and it'll be winging its way to you. Maggie, is there a follow up to this? You've got something else planned for this one, or are you going to sort of stick to writing something a little less sort of onerous for your next project?
Well, no, what I'm really interested in is the 19th century in Spain, because I just feel it's being ignored. And it was the background to a lot that happened in the 20th century. So I'm delving into the 19th century at the moment.
Well, we look forward to
and
you.
Enjoying it.
When you come back from there, we'll have a chat about that. This book is called Echoes of a Vanished World. It's by Maggie Bennett speaking today. It's been a pleasure to speak to you this morning.
Right. Thank you very much. It's been lovely to be with you.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.